Women Who Rock.
Women Rock.
Women Who Rock.
Women Rock.
Women Who Rock.
Women Who Rock.
Women Who Rock.
Women Who Rock. Women Who Rock.
This is Women Who Rock, a podcast promoting female musicians and artists. Today, I am very happy to say that I am joined by all of the members of New Zealand avant folk trio Ida Loon. Rose, Anna, and Deanne from Ida Loon, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Firstly, I need to say big congratulations on the release of your debut self-titled album that came out last week on Home Alone Music. Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have it out in the world.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, you've been together as a group for quite a while, but I understand that the genesis of you all kind of working together was actually doing backing vocals for a different project. So I'm interested to hear how that experience of doing backing vocals together kind of evolve into Ida Loon.
Firstly, it was like a lovely way to meet, actually. We didn't know each other at all. And we had different friends in a band called Fuko's Fables, and they were going on tour and they wanted some backing vocals. And so we just met each other in a rehearsal room and pretty quickly we were just singing together.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk. I think the first thing we did was sing together.
Yeah, you know, there may have been some hellos. Yeah. Hi, nice to meet you. But from there we were singing. So very quickly, I don't know, I mean, I do remember that rehearsal. I remember feeling a little bit nervous because we hadn't met and just kind of figuring out how that would feel. But really quickly, it was like so lovely to sing in harmony together.
Yeah, it was nice not having, but like being backing vocals takes off a huge amount of pressure. So it was quite a low pressure situation. And obviously having three of us doing BBs, we were all harmonizing. So we were quick to recognize that it felt really nice to harmonize together, and our voices worked nicely together, so we kind of collectively thought, why don't we just try it outside?
We finished doing the shows, we did a little tour, and then we started like writing music and singing together pretty quickly.
That seems like a very organic, kind of almost old school way. It's like the polar opposite of meeting on using like a band mix profile. You just met in a room where you were singing together.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, very different to that. Yeah, totally. It was a very natural way to come together, for sure.
You mentioned the idea of the vocal harmonies, which I guess is kind of the centerpiece of Ida Loon.
Mm-hmm.
One of my good friends sings in the St. James Choir in Sydney. He's a tenor, and when I first saw them perform, he kind of explained to me that the choir, he sort of sees it like a big guitar, because we play guitar together as well.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of sees it like a big guitar where each section is a different string. And in Ida Loon, you have quite a wide vocal range. Do you sometimes view the vocal harmonies as an instrument?
Definitely. I think we try and think of our three voices as one instrument, whether that's blending to sound like timbre-wise, more similar, or whether it's really accentuating our different timbres and creating quite a harsh sound.
Mm. Yeah, and I think we mess with our different ranges as well. Like someone who would usually do a low line suddenly will go up to a higher line, or we like to play around with that. We do sort of have a place where we all naturally sit, but kind of messing around with that arrangement creates a different timbre or a different sound as well.
Yeah.
So we're always thinking of ways that we can kind of play around with the voice. Mm.
I personally haven't, and don't know about you guys, but haven't thought of our voices together as a particular specific instrument, like you were using the guitar. I haven't thought of it as a guitar or as a piano. In studying jazz vocals, we were always encouraged to think of the voice as a horn, or you know, it was kind of like you know, that was a little offer that you could choose to go down that way. So I guess if I was to put my voice in in an instrument, it would be a horn, but that doesn't really feel right to the order. I mean, horns have one note, so how would you be harmonizing? Horn is just out of this world.
Yeah, well, and I think, I mean, thinking about, it's an interesting thing to think about. I think coming from, like, school and singing in the choir and stuff like that, or, like, opera choruses and stuff, but when we, I do think about the blend, I think, sometimes in relation to that, or when we're all singing in the same octave and we're trying to sound like one voice, it's like we, yes, we're three different voices, but we are blending, so you can't tell the difference, even though we have quite different voices in different situations, we can kind of
Yeah, it is an interesting thought. I think I saw an interview with Dave Grohl where he was talking about starting as a drummer and then moving to guitar, and then when he picked up a guitar, the first thing he thought was that, you know, like the lower string is just like the kick drum and the higher strings are like the cymbals. So it's just translating something that your brain understands into a new kind of field. So that's kind of how I was feeling when I was first seeing this big choir for the first time. It's like a massive guitar on stage.
I like the visual.
Yeah, me too.
The album. We should talk about the album. It's self-titled. I've listened to it a few times, and one thing that really struck me was I kind of got a sense that there's a contrast between light and dark. There are certainly some light moments, like, for example, I mean, the music in Bittersweet is quite, I think, light and uplifting, but I also got, like, an undertone of darkness as well. And to be honest, I think my favorite track, or one of my favorite tracks, was Song From Me. And it has these... It's like the toms, the drums. It's kind of like tribal and menacing.
There's actually a tribal drum that's used in that song. So good fitting.
Yeah. Right. I was kind of feeling like maybe I would be listening to it in like a clearing in the jungle somewhere. And that's, I mean, but then some other songs have like, you know, beautiful lush string arrangements. So can you tell us a bit about the contrast between the light and darkness throughout the album?
A lot of that comes from the fact that we have quite distinct writing styles, each of us. So we each contributed two of us did three songs, one did four songs. So, and they're kind of evenly, that they're spread out. So, I mean, I think, the fact that we each have our own distinct voice, we each lead the songs that we wrote. So I think part of it is that
I think all of us I know we're just talking about harmony before, but I think we also bring kind of harmony in the voice to create some of that dark undertone. So you might be listening to something that you think, this is beautiful, or this is kind of, you know, I don't know, uplifting or light, and then something will come along that will make you feel uncomfortable. And I think we consciously make that decision with how we treat some of the harmony across all the songs, across each song that we've written individually and then bring together.
But particularly the Bittersweet example is good. Yeah. That the first lyric that we all sing in harmony, the lyric is sweetly. And it is certainly not, it's like the clashiest, crunchiest.
And it's a crunchy harmony. Yeah. And it's meant to make, you know, the listener think,
singing it, like the first times we were singing it, I remember resisting that note so much and like always just going, up a semitone. So then I would like
resolve it.
And so it's really, and still even performing it today, I have to prepare myself before that note and be like, go for it. And I just do the crunchy note. Like, because it's like, it's so effective, I think. And also to that, the light and dark, I think, particularly the songs that I've written, a level of protection maybe, or I'm not sure, just using humour to sort of like mask pain. So that's both Jeremy and Song For Me have that element where I sort of take a story in maybe an ironic fashion and then so the lyrics have humor, but then often the harmony and the undertone, if you actually read into the message, is a lot darker.
I'd like to take a track now, and I had a lot of deliberation about trying to choose a track. I'm gonna go with The Well. Is there, can you tell us a bit about, was there a conscious decision to put this as the first track on your first album?
I think it really makes use of our harmonies. it's quite
I agree. I think it shows that side of us quite quickly, but I also think we just sort of went through, as you do as a man, and was trying to figure out how it felt and where we wanted it to go. And I think the well represents our sound really beautifully and just felt right. Like it just felt right when it came
in. And it builds really beautifully. So it starts out quite minimal and pure, and we thought that it was a beautiful place to start the album, and it sort of takes the listener on a journey that starts simple and then gradually builds from there.
Well, I can't explain why, but it felt right for me that this would be the song that we feature. So let's listen to it now. The first track off the new album from Eidolon, it is called The Well.
Listen here, oh mighty one, quick before my time is done. Show me what I knew so well. Show me how I used to tell. River, wash my thoughts ashore. I can't sell my life no more. Take me to that sea of dreams, never ending abundant streams. Listen here, oh mighty one, quick before my time is done. Show me what I knew so well. Show me how I used to tell. River,
that track was The Well. It's actually the first track off the brand new album from New Zealand's Eidolon. You have been together as Eidolon for quite a few years now. I imagine that over that time you've played a variety of venues, but I was listening to an interview where I heard that you said you played at a graveyard, and I need to explore that topic. Can you tell us about how that went down?
We got great feedback.
We did.
I mean, yeah. So,
we got great feedback from the graveyard.
It was part of an interesting event that was part of sort of the fringe festival of a bike tour by night, where guests come along and they bring their bike and they decorate their bike with, that's part of the performance, is to decorate the bike with lights and and little trinkets, and the bikes ride through sort of the back alleys of Wellington, and the idea is to introduce people to new corners of Wellington that they haven't seen before. And so, yeah, they came over an overpass and then arrived at a graveyard, and we were hiding behind trees. And as they took their seats, we
sang emerged in like single file.
Yeah. Emerged from the trees. We were wearing sort of floaty ghost like clothes, and so yeah, there was sort of, which is weird that they have an amphitheatre in a graveyard, but there was an amphitheatre sort of staring at the graves. So the audience took their seats and we sang to them just a cappella in the night, and then just returned.
Then went back to the bushes when they all left.
But it was quite late. It was something like 9:30, and we performed over three nights. Mm. So we were quite familiar with the graveyard and the happenings of the graveyard at 9:30. And one of the nights we actually stumbled upon a homeless man's bed, which was behind a grave.
I got a bit of a fright because I was behind the tree and I'd like rested my banjo there, and then he was like, hello. Oh my gosh.
No, he didn't say hello. He said, Mary June lived here in 1864 or something. Like, it was just a voice from the grave.
Yeah. So we've had some really interesting gig experiences in our lives.
Okay, the more information I'm getting, the more questions I have.
Yeah, right.
Us too.
But you answered my first one, so it was 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
I've been to a cemetery a few times at night, quite late as well, and I feel as though that would be a very eerie vibe, having a trio of vocal harmonies at that time of night.
And there's no lighting either. There's just the moonlight.
But there's moonlight, but remember we had one of the nights, I think, we had little up lights that was...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
It was sort of that creepy, like we were lit from below.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's exactly what they wanted. They were creating this different experience that people were, you know, going to, and they wanted that feeling, that kind of haunting feeling.
At the cemetery that I've been to a few times at night, they actually have something which I didn't notice during the day, is that a lot of the grave sites actually had a kind of like a solar lantern.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
And so the first time I went there, I was blown away, because it's like all of these, maybe 40% of the graves had lights and all different colours and stuff.
Oh, cool.
That's actually really nice. Yeah.
But I feel like there's a vibe in the air at 9:30 at night in a cemetery that's very difficult to replicate elsewhere.
Yeah.
What's even more crazy is that we were actually playing next to a pit which had hundreds of bodies that were removed from a graveyard in the 60s, which has since been turned into a motorway, and they were dumped. These bodies were all just dumped in this tiny pit, and we were standing next to this pit.
Particularly
eerie. So particularly eerie. Because my sort of view of a graveyard is spooky, Halloweeny, you know. But I think when you look beyond that, you can think of graveyards as nice celebratory spaces with final beautiful flowers, and, you know. But this particular graveyard was pretty depressing. But
It did. My last comment on this is, it did feel nice to sing in that space, though. That often felt like it was deserted or hidden away, or to you know,
That it was such a sad story. And I didn't know that story until we went there and read about that. We weren't, even though it was an eerie feeling, we weren't sort of trying to amplify that craziness.
That's true. Yeah,
you know, it did. It felt nice to perform there, except that we'd been jumped by the homeless man on the grave.
I think that would have been genuinely frightening.
Yes, that was.
It was running into someone, because when I've been there at night by myself, I thought, like, if someone is there, even if it's really innocuous, it's going to be really scary. Okay, well, we performed vocal harmonies in front of a mass grave. That's fine. I'm kind of glad that I asked about that. People have very different perceptions of cemeteries, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a widow. When I went to Oxford last year, we had a day off in between work, and most of my colleagues did like fun stuff, but I went to the cemetery to J.R.R. Tolkien's grave.
Oh, wow.
And that was, I just kind of like sat on the bench for a while, and I don't know, it's something like serene and respectful about it.
Yeah. I'm outside of my bed at the moment. I'm working on a project with my marae, which is we're designing a burial ground, which in New Zealand we're called an urupa, which we've been gifted by the council some land that we can use to bury our dead. And that's a super interesting project to be a part of. And it's looking at how you can make a space as peaceful and joyful as possible so that people really want to come. I know that I'm going to be buried there, so I want to make a place that my son wants to come visit me.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking a lot about burial sites recently.
I'm going to change the tone a little bit. Your album came out on the, I think, 18th of November. So, like, I mean, pretty close to the end of the year. From my understanding, you didn't have an actual launch gig. Are you intending on doing that soon, or like the start of next year maybe?
Yeah, we're looking at the start of early next year to do a tour in New Zealand. Obviously it's been like a really strange year and a different year for musicians, and for us, like, we really wanted to release it this year. It just felt like this was the time for us to release this album. But we didn't know whether touring would be a feasible thing, and we didn't want to go through the stress of organizing something and having to cancel it. So we decided, like, yeah, we'd love to release it this year, and then we can organize a really nice tour for next year. I think we feel really good about that decision because we didn't want to keep holding it back, and it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that will be a national tour just within New Zealand. One day it would be great to get to Australia, but not in this climate.
Sure. Well, I mean, you've got to check the news every day, right, to see what the story is. Okay, well, that will be hopefully, I assume, a joyous occasion after 7 years of working together doing this, the first tour for the album.
Yeah.
Segment, Tell Me a Thing, where I have a list of 7 topics. I ask you to choose one and tell us something about it. The topics are musical equipment, recording equipment, poetry, Patti Smith, punk rock, death, and politics. So, Rose, Anna, and Deanne of Idaloon, can you please tell us a thing?
All right, tell you a thing. we chose poetry. And we're going to freestyle it a little bit. I guess when I think about poetry in our band, it draws me back to how we think of communicating ideas in our songs through lyrics. And I'm actually kind of interested. For me, I think melody and lyrics are really kind of joined together in how I express things. Like, it needs to fit with a melody. Those things need to work together. I'm kind of interested to...
I feel like Leonard Cohen is a great example of this.
Mm-hmm.
His Book of Longing is one of those Penguin classics. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I think he's a great example of, setting poetry to music and rhythm. I think he's a very interesting man.
I actually agree with that. I saw him, like, maybe when I was, like, 18, he came to New Zealand, and he had this wonderful band, and, like, that left an impression on me. And maybe without realising it, I think I have taken things from that, and totally it feeds into that writing for what we do.
And, I mean, I think of him, you know, as, like, an iconic poet, but then I also kind of, like, don't really know where to draw the line between any songwriting and poetry, because I kind of think they're just... songwriting is pop. I don't really think you write a novel and then put that to music. It is like, but maybe that is just my narrow view. And generally, I don't think of myself as a poet, so it's sort of interesting for me to say that. But I guess, I don't know, there's so many forms of poetry that if you take a song's lyrics, you know, you just write them down, then it's some sort of weird poetry.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that there's 10 songs on the album, and so it seems as though each song was kind of maybe driven by one person. So with the lyrics, is it more this song is written by this person, or are you writing the lyrics or the poetry collaboratively?
It's definitely an individual thing in terms of that. Like, we will bring maybe a complete song in terms of the lyrics and the structure, usually to a rehearsal, and then we might work through the arrangements and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the lyrical content, totally an individual has, like, written it or expressed an idea. Yeah,
except for one exception in The Well, where Deanne, I'm pretty sure it was Listen Here, Oh Mighty One.
Yes.
And then when we were singing it, we were sort of like, My Dear One.
Oh, that's right.
And then we sort of had to re-decide, because it changes the...
It really does change the tone.
It changes the tone. Yeah. Listen Here, Oh Mighty One, quick before my time is done, or Listen Here, Oh My Dear One, quick before... Yeah. It's either like a prayer or something, or it's like a nice... So that was kind of an interesting... And what do we go with?
I think we alternate.
Still haven't decided.
Recently she threw out this time, it's actually my near one.
Yeah. I think one thing that writing songs, it kind of does allow you to be a poet without realizing it. You may not think of yourself as someone who would sit down and write write poetry, but kind of
a poet and you don't know it.
I like it, Deanne. But you know, you allow yourself to do that in the language of writing a song, and I think that's something really special, for sure.
I have really enjoyed our time together. Anna, Deanne and Rose, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and big congratulations on the release of your album.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Listen here, oh my dear one, quick before my time is done.
Women Who Rock is proudly produced in the Sydney studios of Do As You Are 107.3.
Show me how.